Okay, good morning, everyone. Thought we would go ahead and get the program underway. I'm David Pumphrey. I just recently joined the Energy and National Security Program here at CSIS, so it's really my honor to be the one to introduce Minister Sontag and his presentation here. I've had a long career, as probably many of you know, with the Department of Energy looking at international energy security issues. And one of the most important things that we focused on was the relationship with Canada, recognizing the important role that Canada plays in our overall energy security. Many of you probably know that Canada is the U.S.'s top supplier of oil and gas, and many think that, well, that's Alberta, but it isn't just Alberta, as we're going to learn today. Saskatchewan is the second largest oil producer and exporting a significant amount of oil to the U.S., and we look forward to hearing more about that in the presentation. Saskatchewan is also the world's top producer of uranium, and as we're looking at a potential rebirth of the nuclear industry here in the United States, and for many reasons, both energy security and environmental reasons, that's going to be an important source for our supplies in the future as well and continue to grow. On top of its resource wealth, Saskatchewan has built an economy that has currently experienced a period of tremendous growth and expansion with record-breaking numbers across the board, including in job creation, private investment, and mineral exploration. We're very fortunate to have Minister Maynard Sontag with us today. He'll provide us, I think, with some important insights into the Saskatchewan's energy profile. The minister was first elected to the Saskatchewan legislature in 1991, re-elected in 95, 99, and 2003. He served in many capacities, a member of the Treasury Board, Crown Investment Corporation, the Investment Board, and vice chairperson of the Cabinet Committee on the Economy. In 2001, Mr. Sontag served as Minister of Energy and Mines, the predecessor of his current department, and February this year also became Minister of Saskatchewan's Crown Investment Corporation. He is here promoting Saskatchewan's importance as a supplier of safe and secure energy, as well as the province's leadership in alternative energies and other technologies. I would also want to take the moment to mention that there are mementos of Saskatchewan that are on the back table in case anyone missed them, that they are there for any of you to take. So these are exciting times in Saskatchewan. Mr. Minister, if you would like to step up and this presentation.
Yep, thanks very much. Well, good morning, and thank you very much for the wonderful introduction. I was asked to say this at the end, but I know I will not remember if I don't say it now. The mementos that have been referred to, please take one. They're filled with Saskatoon chocolate, Saskatoon jam, and Saskatoon tea. And I'm advised that you should not wash them. If you put liquid in them, they actually change color, kind of a neat little feature. But don't put them in the dishwasher because they'll stay white after that, I'm told. So it is great to be here. I've been to a lot of places, but I've never been to Washington before. So it is you have a beautiful city. The architecture is amazing. And we had a wonderful little walk around yesterday evening. Actually, in my own clothes, we arrived the night before. Don't worry, it was Air Canada, so you can be critical of Canadian Airlines. And I didn't have any luggage, so we had a long day yesterday with me trying to put together a wardrobe that didn't belong to me. But anyway, it was here I am in all my finery. As a minister, for those who are not familiar with the Canadian system, it is an elected position, so I am indeed a politician in Saskatchewan and Canada, and our schedules are pretty managed by people. So I was speaking to CSIS, I was a bit confused by that because some of you might know that CSIS in Canada is the equivalent of, I guess, the CIA here in the U.S. It's the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, I think, is the proper term. So. And I see a couple. I saw Jamie from Cameco here this morning following me around, and I said, I thought, oh my God, I really am. He's been following me to all the events. This really is CSIS. Anyway, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here as part of the Center for Strategic and International Studies and Energy Speakers Series. It's an auspicious beginning to my term as Saskatchewan's Minister of Industry and Resources, and having been assigned to this department just at the beginning of this month, actually. This month also marks my 10th year anniversary as a cabinet minister in the Saskatchewan government, and as was indicated, 16 years in the Saskatchewan legislature. So I'm pleased to be following in the footsteps of our Premier, Lauren Calvert, who was actually just in Washington not long ago, just at the end of last year, actually, to raise awareness of the role Saskatchewan plays in providing energy to the United States, and in particular in uranium and crude oil. At that time, some may know that Premier Calvert had a private meeting with Vice President Cheney. In addition to discussing uranium and oil, they talked about Saskatchewan's world-class initiatives in developing clean coal technologies. They also talked about Saskatchewan's carbon dioxide sequestration project, which is the largest in the world, by the way, and which contributes to our role as the world leader in enhanced oil recovery techniques. Yesterday, Saskatchewan once again had a presence on Capitol Hill. We were joined by Senator Orrin Hatch, who delivered opening remarks at a seminar we hosted for political leaders and decision makers with an interest in energy. Senator Hatch's remarks drove home the point that the future will be fueled by a diverse energy mix, and we agree wholeheartedly with that. There is a strength in diversity, and Saskatchewan has energy diversity that no other Canadian province can match, not even Alberta, in terms of primary energy supply. The title of my presentation today refers to Saskatchewan's opportunities in uranium and in oil. And I'd like to start by giving you a broader overview of Saskatchewan's incredible diverse energy economy, after which, if I could, I'll focus on Saskatchewan's uranium and crude oil. Saskatchewan is recognized as an energy powerhouse. We provide roughly one-third of Canada's total primary energy and are the largest per capita energy producer in the country. Our oil production has doubled since 1990, and we are now the second leading oil producer in Canada, the third leading producer of natural gas, and the third leading producer of coal. In addition, Saskatchewan is the largest uranium producer in the world. On the renewable energy side, Saskatchewan is a leader in developing green power initiatives. With 46% of Canada's arable land, it makes sense that Saskatchewan was the first province in Canada to mandate ethanol use. We are already home to a dynamic and growing bioproducts industry that includes strength in biofuels such as ethanol, biodiesel, and oils and lubricants. We are developing gasification of wood waste to produce electricity. Our forests make up an area larger than New Mexico. We have an ample hydroelectricity. Our water resources include, as I've described to several, please come and visit us, over 100,000 lakes with an extensive river system. Saskatchewan's wind turbines generate enough electricity to power 64,000 homes. We are a leader in hydrogen research. The Saskatchewan Research Council has built the world's first pickup truck modified to operate on a combination of hydrogen gasoline and another truck that operates on hydrated ethanol and diesel fuel. We are moving ahead in solar and geothermal energy. In fact, Premier Calvert recently held a private meeting with the Arizona governor. The agenda included partnership opportunities in such areas as clean coal, solar, hydrogen, and uranium. With regard to clean coal technology, through SAS Power, our electrical utility that the province actually owns, Saskatchewan is set on building the first industrial-scale clean coal generating station on the continent. Coal is the cheapest, most accessible form of energy in the world, and Saskatchewan is well on the road to becoming a world leader in clean coal technology that can be exported, we hope, on a global scale. Saskatchewan is the only province in Canada and one of the few regions in the world producing from such a range of primary energy sources. We are one of only four provinces in Canada that produces more energy in total than it consumes. So in absolute terms, Saskatchewan accounts for 32% of the Canadian primary energy production, second only to Alberta. We have one of the fastest growing economies in Canada due in no small part, and I think probably obviously, to the incredible strength of our energy sector. Investment in mineral exploration in Saskatchewan has grown tenfold since 2001. Back then, spending totaled $23 million. This year, we're forecasting $277 million will be invested in exploration. The amount of land being explored has been doubled since 2004. Uranium and diamonds are at the top of the list. As an aside, some of you might know that we lay claim to the world's largest diamond-bearing kimberlite fields. We hope to be mining diamonds sometime soon, but that's an entire separate presentation. We also have a strong innovation economy with expertise in technologies for addressing climate change. Saskatchewan is home to the world's largest international field research project to study the geological storage of carbon dioxide. Some experts have suggested that this technology could enable Canada to meet one-third of its total Kyoto commitment. We are recognized as world-class researchers. When Canada held a national competition to decide where its first synchrotron facility should be located, Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, if you can say that back-to-back, by the way, you're truly Canadian, was chosen based on the level of nuclear science taking place in the city and at the University of Saskatchewan. You may well know, because the United States has its own synchrotrons, that these tools create light thousands of times brighter than the sun. They are used for examining the smallest matter of life. Scientists refer to synchrotrons as the Swiss Army knife of research because their applications are absolutely endless. The synchrotron is adjacent to Innovation Place, a research park responsible for 30% of all the ag biotech that occurs in Canada. More and more, our people are employed in advanced technology. We still grow wheat, but even in agriculture, there's diversity. Earlier, I mentioned ethanol and biofuels. Over 50 varieties of specialty crops are grown for use in pharmaceuticals, detergents, paint, biodegradable lubricants, paper, textiles, bioplastics, and much, much more. Innovation is a key contributor to developing Saskatchewan's natural resources, and the unprecedented economic growth that we are currently experiencing is in large part due to our immense energy resources. So let us look a bit closer now at what this encompasses. No matter where you go in the world, when one talks about mining uranium, one, in my view, usually talks about Saskatchewan. Over the next 50 years, global energy consumption is expected to double. The world will consume more energy than it has used in the entire history of mankind. In order to meet these needs, energy will come from a wide variety of sources, including nuclear power fueled by uranium mined in Saskatchewan. It is gaining value as a source of emission-free electricity. In fact, uranium oxide has risen from an all-time low of just over $7 in 2001 to the highest price in 25 years, adjusted for inflation, at $135 a pound. Prices could climb significantly if new production is not brought online fast enough to meet surging demand. The World Nuclear Association predicts the number of reactors will increase 15% over the next 10 years. Roughly 25% of the world production is in our province, and that level of production is expected to grow by nearly 60% in the next 5 years. Saskatchewan's high-grade uranium deposits aren't only the largest, they are, in fact, the very richest, fully, and this is amazing, fully 100 times richer than the world average, 100 times richer than the world average. Given all of this, we are currently evaluating opportunities for Saskatchewan in processing and in refining uranium. The province's mining industry is well-equipped to manage a substantial increase in uranium sales. A transition from second-generation uranium mines from the years 1975 to 1983 to new high-grade mines is now almost complete. When the new Cigar Lake mine begins production, it will be the world's second-largest high-grade deposit of uranium. The mine is a joint venture including Cameco, the largest producer in the world, Areva Resources, and two Japanese partners. Saskatchewan people are extremely supportive of our mining industry, especially in the north, where it is the largest full-time employer of First Nations people and a major engine of economic development in the region. Saskatchewan's uranium industry currently generates more than $540 million a year in provincial economic activity and accounts for 4,800 direct and indirect jobs. Through taxes and royalties, about $40 million goes to provincial coffers on an annual basis. Currently, Cameco sells its uranium under long-term contracts, which means its uranium is priced at about half of its current market price. In a few years, Cameco will be happy. They'll be selling uranium at much higher prices, at which point, of course, we'll be much happier because tax revenues gained through uranium will increase substantially. In this industry, wealth is accrued long before mining even begins. The exploration phases generate substantial wealth for Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan's overall mining industry is one of the province's oldest economic sectors. It continues to deliver continues to deliver new economic opportunities, advanced technology, and new science. It was one of the first industries in Canada, by the way, to adopt an environmental protection policy and to develop best practices in all areas, including environmental stewardship. Saskatchewan's uranium industry is regarded as a global model for environmental and occupational safety. We have more than 750 million pounds of uranium in Saskatchewan's reserves, the equivalent of nearly 18 billion barrels of oil. Saskatchewan's commitment to mining uranium and growing the industry is a long-term commitment. We fully intend on keeping our title as the world's largest supplier. Earlier, I mentioned that Saskatchewan is the second largest producer of oil in Canada. Over $2 billion were invested in exploring and developing Saskatchewan's oil last year. This is approximately 20% more than the year before. And one of our challenges is that our oil is fairly hard to access. It's estimated that we are producing a mere 15% of our discovered oil in place. Through our internationally renowned petroleum research technology research center, we are pioneering technology to unlock at least a portion of the remaining 85%. In Saskatchewan, enhanced oil recovery flushes out more of the oil than could have been recovered under conventional means. In total, we have 10 enhanced oil recovery projects. Six use steam injection and two use a vapor extraction technology that doesn't require water or heat. Carbon dioxide sequestration is being used in two oil fields for enhanced oil recovery. It is estimated that their productive lifespans will be extended by approximately 25 years thanks to this innovation, and we have excellent infrastructure to accommodate the additional oil reserves. The province is now beginning to examine its oil sands potential. It's estimated by provincial geologists that up to 10,000 square miles of our province's northwest may have some level of oil sands potential. That's an area, by the way, about the size of Massachusetts. New regulations have been recently passed that will encourage exploration of this resource located adjacent to the massive Athabasca oil sands deposit in Alberta. So in wrapping up, I'd like to say that there's a lot of room for new investment in Saskatchewan's energy science and technology activities. Through our royalty and tax regime, we are stimulating oil and gas development, and we are expanding uranium mining capacity. As a result, we've seen the level of private investment in our province more than double since 1991. As well, we have the third highest job creation rate in all of Canada in 2006. Business pundits and financial institutions are predicting Saskatchewan's economic momentum will continue at a rapid pace. But we don't take growth for granted. We work hard at cultivating new economic growth and sharpening Saskatchewan's competitive edge. If I have done my job well this morning, the picture you have formed of Saskatchewan is one that compels you to look even closer. Our valuable natural resources may be the luck of geography, but our development of those resources is, in our view, anything but luck. New ideas and technologies, investment in innovation, and strategic changes to our business climate are driving our growing economy. We are seeing many opportunities for innovative partnerships. It is our sincere desire to be joined by more of our neighbors to the south. I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this morning, and I welcome all of you to come and visit us in Canada, and especially in Saskatchewan. Thank you very much. I don't know the answer to that question.
All right. Okay.
The first question I can't answer.
Well, thank you very much for the presentation. We do have some time for questions. The ground rules on questions are please identify yourselves so that we'll know which organizations you represent as you're posing the question. So I'd like to turn the floor open now to any questions.
Can I just say as well, just for clarification again, some may not know the sort of the political structure, as the minister is elected politician, in the U.S., the ministers are sort of probably the most knowledgeable on detail, but in Canada, that's not the case. I have my deputy minister, Glenn Vikel, who is the senior official in the department. So if it's a technical question, I'm going to defer to Glenn. But, sorry, go ahead.
Mr. Minister, thanks very much for your remarks. Do you find that the energy industry in Saskatchewan is limited because of the lack of critical materials and skilled labor?
That's a very good question. We think in Saskatchewan we're really blessed with a diversity of sort of natural resources, but also we've been blessed in another way. It wasn't introduced that way, which is fine. But I also have had for a number of years now the Ministry for First Nations and Métis Relations, and in Saskatchewan we have one of the fastest growing demographic is actually First Nations. We think we're uniquely positioned. We provided it's a bit unique. We provided tax dollars in the last budget and the budget previous for training of First Nations. So we think we have an opportunity to fill those positions that are becoming available right now. And I know it is much to their credit, much like they've done on the environmental side. They've been leaders. The uranium industry in the north has worked very, very closely with a number of First Nations and many Northerners who are predominantly First Nations in the northern part of our province to fill those positions. And I don't know what the representative workforce would be there, but I'm on lots of locations. It would be close to 50%, I would think. Yeah, thanks. So again, we're aggressively working on immigration, but we think we have lots of opportunities to fill those positions locally as well. You've got another question in the back. Then next.
I'm Bob Hershey. I'm a consultant. Could you tell us a bit more about your clean coal program?
I think I might, on that one, I might get you, Glenn, okay, if you want to talk about that.
Our electricity is produced in Saskatchewan by a Crown corporation.
So it's owned by the government. And that Crown corporation has undertaken an investigation of a clean coal project. It needs the Crown Corporation needs about is forecasting a need for about an additional 300 megawatts of electricity by the year 2011 or 2012, and the government has made a commitment that any new generation electrical generation will be net zero emissions. And so the Crown Corporation is looking at ways that it can meet that commitment. We have in Saskatchewan about 300 years worth of coal. It's a fairly low value coal, so it's not going to make it very far in terms of transportation to export destinations. So if we're going to take advantage of that resource, we have to take advantage of it at home. The Crown Corporation is looking at an oxy-fired coal generation project, which would have the carbon dioxide captured and ultimately transported to an oil field and then sequestered in the ground there. In case you're not aware, we do have the Weyburn and Mydale carbon dioxide sequestration projects going on in Saskatchewan, and they're working very well at sequestering carbon dioxide. We believe that in the end they will have sequestered about 35 million megatons of carbon dioxide when they're finally done. I don't know if I could be more specific on the clean coal project than that, but if there's anything else that you want to ask about it, I'd be happy to try and answer.
Joanne, just as well, while she's going to the next question, how much time do we have? David was just... Okay.
I'm Ann Duca with the Department of Energy. You mentioned the oil production you have now and the potential for more production from oil sands. How do you view the infrastructure, the pipeline infrastructure, and the refining and upgrading infrastructure that you have to bring that oil to market? Is there enough now? Would you need to build more? Are there plans for how that piece of the development would be handled?
Right now in Saskatchewan, all that's happening is exploration on the Saskatchewan side, just across from the Athabasca. It's the same basin, actually, that comes up through there. Yeah, I think the exploration's gone on for about 3 years now, something like that, yeah. And they're just in the process of trying to market that research now so the development could actually take place. There's no doubt that there would be required significant infrastructure, roads, pipelines, all of the above. There's work going on to exactly research what would need to be done. Maybe this is a given. Exploration companies would love us to put all the infrastructure in place right now, which would make their product much more marketable. But as a government, we'll wait to see exactly what's proven before we're going to put a lot of infrastructure in place. But it's not there. These are in remote parts of the... I shouldn't say remote. It's not like you're driving through Shield to get there. It's quite accessible, and it's not hard to get the infrastructure in there, but the infrastructure is not there yet. Okay.
Hi, I'm Sarah Ladislaw with the Energy Program here at CSIS. Thank you very much for a very interesting presentation. I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about your views on the government's new greenhouse gas emissions reduction plans and how greenhouse gas emissions caps or limits what in Canada or the U.S. tend to affect the way that you all plan going forward for developing your resources.
Now, were you asking specifically about the new targets that our province just announced? Because I'd be surprised if you actually were aware of that. But that's very good if you are.
No, I was talking about the larger Canadian targets that were announced a couple months ago. But if you would like to talk
sure.
about yours,
yeah.
that would be
no,
nice, too.
I'd be happy to. I'd be happy to, actually. It's just a coincidence, because just last week, myself and the Premier and the Minister of Environment just announced our targets for our province as it relates to emissions. Let me just tell you what ours are. Our targets are to stabilize emissions by 2010, which is fairly aggressive, 3 years from now. Reduction of 22% by 2020 and by 32% by 2020 and 80% by 2050, which is some of the most aggressive targets in, I would argue, North America. We have in Saskatchewan, because we're agriculture-based, because we're energy-based, because we have a very large and cold geography in the wintertime at least, we rely a lot on fossil fuels, and we're one of the larger emitters of greenhouse gases. So we think we have a responsibility to deal with that. Now, some of the stuff that Glenn just talked about, the Weyburn-Mydale carbon sequestration project, which, by the way, I don't know if you mentioned, is the world's largest project and developed at the Petroleum Research Center in Regina is one of the ways we plan on dealing with that. We think as well through technologies that also Glenn talked about, the clean coal technology. Those are opportunities to reduce greenhouse gases. We're believing that through that we can reduce significantly there. Saskatchewan is also home to 46% of the arable land in all of arable agricultural land in all of Canada. So it's very, very large. And we've announced a fairly aggressive ethanol biofuels initiative that contributes as well. But having said that, we've also been very public about the fact that we don't have all the answers yet. But we need to, our view is that we need to put in place aggressive targets. We've been very successful at developing technologies through the places like the research centers. And we're of the view that we absolutely, as a society, have to get there. So that's kind of where we're at.
Yes, good morning. My name is Tess Sarante. I'm with LaBeouf Lamb, Greenland McRae. I have, first of all, thank you very much for a very interesting presentation. I have a question on the investors. If you had a wish list, in what specific areas are you attracting American investors?
Well, that's an interesting question. I might offend somebody in the room if I pick one. Yeah. The easy answer, of course, is all of the above. I don't know. An area that we've, Glenn, you might even disagree with me on this, I don't know, but an area that I think that we would like to create as sort of a model is in the area of research and technology. I think that's an area that we'd like to, we have the synchrotron, which, by the way, Murray McLaughlin is here with me on behalf of the research center. If anybody has any very specific questions, he'd be happy to answer them. But it's an amazing facility that does incredible research. And in our view, Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, I know we have research in Regina as well, but Saskatoon, Saskatchewan is becoming a bit of a home, a center of excellence for research in a whole host of areas. We've actually attracted a large number of researchers from the U.S., California, and places like that already. And I think if, as a politician, it would be one of the areas that I think we'd like to see more investment from the private sector. We think we have tremendous potential there. Having said that, we welcome investment in any sector. How did I do, Glenn?
I agree 100% with what you're with the direction you're going, Minister. The carbon sequestration project that we're doing at Weyburn, the U.S. Department of Energy partnered with us on that project, and it's just a classic example of how you know, when we come together, we can make good things happen. That, as the minister said, is a world class project, and it is sequestering carbon right now. We need to do another project. We need to do a saline aquifer project where we can test and see what happens when we sequester carbon into a saline aquifer, and can we convince ourselves that the carbon dioxide will stay there forever, as we are convincing ourselves that the carbon dioxide will stay in that Weyburn project forever. We need to get on with a project like that, and so it's an instance where we would very much like to partner with, once again, the U.S. DOE, and get on with demonstrating that in fact this technology works and can be used as a way to address our greenhouse gas problem.
We would like you to invest less in hockey teams. We're not thrilled about the fact that you took the cup away in us this year. So, for those who watch hockey.
Yes, I'm Clifton Farrell with the Nuclear Energy Institute. Last year, on a visit here to Washington, Premier Calvert expressed an interest to have the uranium produced in northern Saskatchewan undergo some processing before it left the province. This could be a purification or even conversion, kind of the next step on its way to having fuel prepared, manufactured. And I was curious whether any progress has been made on this initiative, or you're in developing an interest by Cameco or Riva to establish such processing facilities in Saskatchewan.
The only thing I can say about that is both Cameco and Riva are now developing proposals and doing research to determine whether or not that makes sense. We hope that their conclusions are positive, but beyond that, I can't say much more. Glenn, do you know any more detail on that?
The government of Saskatchewan has certainly indicated that it is open and would welcome refining and conversion processing going on in Saskatchewan. And both Cameco and Areva have indicated that they are undertaking research to decide on whether or not that's the location where they would locate further refining or conversion. But they haven't completed their studies yet.
Thank you. Neil Dern, TD International. Wondering if you might be able to comment on what the government perceives as the greatest impediments to crude oil production here in the next 5 to 10 years. Is it labor shortage, technology, combination of both, infrastructure? And then what is being done to mitigate those impediments?
Well, I'm not an expert on this, and so this will just be an opinion. But I think it's reflective of our governments. It would be the issue of labor, and it would be the issue of technology. I mean, it's a finite resource. As I've described, we have. We're extracting about, because ours is hard to access, so we're extracting about 15% right now. That's why we think we're particularly well positioned by way of the fact that we think we have access to the labor force, that all it needs to happen is it needs to be trained. By the way, historically, I don't want to get into too much detail, but historically in Canada, all of the funding, whether it's for health or education, is the responsibility of the federal government, the federal treasury, for First Nations. We've made a decision several years ago as a government that for this very reason, the question that you ask, we need to put aside our differences with the federal government and start to do some training. And we've done some very, very unique things. We have a system of regional colleges that train throughout the province. And, in fact, we actually have a mobile training lab now that actually goes right into a First Nation and will train people. So we think that we need it to be aggressive in an area that we have opportunity to fill some of those positions. But and in addition to that, on the research side, so those are the two areas that I think require the most investment. On the research side, I've referred to the Petroleum Research Center in Regina at the university have received great support from the industry, by the way. Again, not so great for the federal treasury, but that's another story. The combination of those two, I think, are our biggest challenges, but we also think we're well positioned on both of them. And as I said, a number of the technologies have been developed for enhanced extraction of oil directly out of the research center in Regina. That's now going to be, that technology is being used worldwide. Is that what you think too? Good.
China has embarked on probably the world's largest program for construction of new nuclear power reactors. Have they come knocking on your door with regard to uranium supplies?
Supplies, yes, absolutely. Yes, yeah. Well, we see them as an incredible potential market for Saskatchewan, for sure. We've gone there, by the way, too, just doing the same thing, sort of thing. We didn't actually wait for them to come and knock on our door.
Hi, Mr. Minister, Al-Nasir Hamir from Eurasia Group. I've got a question with several parts to it. I was interested in your comments regarding uranium pricing in Saskatchewan. I believe you mentioned that Cameco is currently selling uranium at below market prices, and I'd just like to understand that policy and the rationale behind it a little bit better. And I'd also like to understand whether domestic sales are treated in the same way as exports. And finally, you mentioned that policy is likely to change at some point in the near future. And I'd like to get a sense of the timing of that, if you could, please.
I think I can answer generally the first part and the second part. Glenn actually, by the way, very fortunately came from the Department of Finance to the Department of Industry and Resources, so he was involved in the putting together some of the models. In the first part of your question, as it relates to the prices, it would just simply have been locked in. It would have been a company buying that would have simply hedged on the prices and locked in. So I think that's essentially what has happened to the company. It's got nothing to do with the province directly. The second part of your question I can't answer and you can answer that. And the third part, no, I didn't say we were changing policy. All I said was that once these, because our royalties are locked to the prices, once they're out of those contracts, it means more revenue for them, which means more revenue for us. So,
just to elaborate a little bit on the minister's answer. Typically, when a uranium producer sells his uranium to a utility, to a producer, electricity producer, they'll enter into quite long-term contracts. And so when you think about the price of uranium, in 2001 it was $7.10 a kilogram, and it's currently $130, $135. And so there's been a fairly rapid increase in the price of uranium over the last few years. And the contracts that companies enter into can be 5, 10, or 15 years. And so the producer is still probably receiving a significant amount of the revenue that it's receiving is still at some old price. And as those new contracts, or as those old contracts expire and new contracts are negotiated, they're going to be negotiated at the new price. And so the revenue for that producer is going to go up rather dramatically, and with no change in policy at the government's level, our revenues are going to go up as well, because the royalty that we take is price or revenue or profit sensitive. there is no domestic versus international policy differential for the government for our exports of uranium. We sell, like, the company is free to choose as to whether or not it's going to sell its uranium to Ontario to be produced into electricity there, or to any other export location, subject to the federal government's non-proliferation treaties and all of that.
Glenn, I stand to be corrected, but I think you just cut the world price by about 60%, because I think it's $135 a pound, not a kilogram.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't make news.
There are other questions for the minister at this point?
My name is Paul. I'm with the Arlington Institute. I was wondering if you could speak about Canada as a whole and their ability to produce oil sands,
Just
outside of Saskatchewan.
Yes, go ahead.
If you could just speak about some of the obstacles to producing oil sands.
Okay, sure. Yeah. The question was about some of the obstacles to the put oil sands into production. Well, I think my answer would be similar to the question I think that you asked at the start would be. The issue is, first of all, proving out the resource. Now, I'm not a geologist, but here's roughly, as has been described to me. It's like a basin. The oil sands are like a basin coming from Alberta, where it's much thicker, and it comes up into Saskatchewan. The overlay is about 500 feet, and the depth of the resource that we think we have is about 50 feet. So it presents some unique challenges as it relates to extraction. And if you want some of that detail, Glenn or someone else can answer that. But the challenge will be, first of all, proving to the developers that we have a resource worth developing, that in fact we have the technology that actually can extract it, because right now what's going on at the research center that I described is some research around what is the most cost-effective way to actually extract it. And then, of course, to ensure that as a government, I mean, our responsibility then is to put in place infrastructure to actually transport that product to market. So those are all of the challenges that I see in front of us right now. But again, it's I actually represent an area not too far from where the oil sands are being explored right now. And again, I guess the point I want to make is it's very clear based on the investment that's made that there's a fair resource there on the Saskatchewan side as well. And for us to get the infrastructure in there will be expensive, but it's not going to be like trying to get infrastructure into the Canadian Shield. It's fairly easily accessible to get into this area. So this is not insurmountable. So for anybody, any investors in the room, don't feel like we can't do it, because we can.
Any other questions? Okay. Well, let me please join me in thanking the minister for his presentation.
Thank you very much.